Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Welcome to episode 15 of the SJP Wrestling Podcast. On today's show, we are looking back some 19 years-ish to Survivor Series 2001, which was the end of the invasion angle with the alliance of WCW and ECW trying to put Vince McMahon's WWF out of business. I'm very, very happy to welcome the magnificent Matt Willis to the show to discuss this pay-per-view. It's a pay-per-view he describes as being one of his favourites, and it's also a show I adore myself. It's a great pay-per-view to look back on, and I had a brilliant time talking about it with Matt. I hope you'll enjoy listening. On the topic of Survivor Series and looking back on old shows, I hope those of you who caught it enjoyed the special bonus episode this last week covering Survivor Series 1990. I look back some 30 years to the day on the release of the podcast on that show, with some odd matches and odd haircuts, some great performers, and of course the debut of The Undertaker. If bonus episodes like that are something you enjoy or would like to hear more of, I'd really appreciate you letting me know. You can do this by contacting me and the show in general on all of our social media platforms. We're available on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and you can find us at SJP Wrestling Pod. On the subject of social media links, tomorrow, as I'm speaking into my microphone to you now, recording this intro now, tomorrow is the first sit down and record of a new show I'm working on with Mags from Five Rounds Pod and various other projects, called Chain Wrestling. You can find that show at @chain_wrestling on Twitter. We're going to be looking at the Booker T, Scott Steiner, WCW Mayhem 2000 main event, which was a steel cage straitjacket match. Very odd time in WCW, as I'm sure you'll agree. And the basic premise of the show is, we decided upon that first topic by Mags and I both putting forward random matches and then putting it out on Twitter for you all to vote as to which you'd like to hear us talk about. And the reason we're approaching this and calling it Chain Wrestling is that after we've looked at this one particular match, the social media for that show, and I suppose through Mags's and my own, will have further options for you to vote on for the following episode of Chain Wrestling. The only premise with the matches that we're going to be putting out on the poll is I will select one that is somehow linked to the match that we cover in that episode, Steiner versus Booker T. Mags will also select one that is somehow linked to Steiner Booker T from 2000. And then it's up to you guys out there listening to vote on the Twitter poll and decide where we go from there. The idea being that we're going to spend a short time. I mean, the shows aren't going to be massively long, hopefully kind of bite-sized for you all to sort of listen to and then move on with your day. The idea being that we're going to be looking at these matches one at a time, and then linking them to the next show, and then you deciding what you want to hear. So again, the idea being that potentially show number one, you could trace the topic all the way through to, if we get lucky enough to make it to maybe show 10, there's a link all the way through and everything is connected. Mags worded it as almost 6 degrees of separation with spandex, which I thought was a brilliant way of putting it. So look out for the first episode of Chain Wrestling dropping sometime next week. Look out for the polls as well. Support the show. Me and Mags are really excited about it and we hope you enjoy it. Again, though, on that note of looking back on old pay-per-views, I'm over the moon to welcome Matt Willis onto the show for the first time. I've spoken with Matt previously on Talk at the Table, one of his shows. He's a very knowledgeable, intelligent wrestling fan. I had a great time talking to him. I can't wait to have him back on the show, to be honest, to discuss further pay-per-views and further shows. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. I am delighted to welcome the extra super talented podcaster Matt Willis to the show. How are we doing, sir?
You flatter me, sir. You flatter me, but you did, but you did miss out Magnificent.
So. Magnificent. Magnificent. Very good.
As named so by Jackson from the MGB Wrestling Podcast, and I have cherished that nickname ever since. So that's
my good. I can see why. I can see why. Definitely worth it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
So, how you doing? How are things?
Things are good. Time of recording. We have just come off of Survivor Series 2020 last night. I stayed up for the whole show. My word, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And hopefully some of that enthusiasm will come through in this show.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to ask you about before we got on to our other Survivor Series topic, I suppose, from sort of 19 years ago. I enjoyed Survivor Series as well. I stayed up and watched the show live with my wife, and I thought there was plenty of good stuff there. I thought the Undertaker send-off was as good as they could do, considering the circumstances with no crowd and so on. Reigns, McIntyre was fantastic. I enjoyed Sasha Banks versus Oscar as well. You enjoyed the show yourself?
Yes. I particularly like the fact that I actually called it Lana was going to be the last person standing for Team Raw. I love the fact that everyone said I was talking out my backside. That includes you, Mags. but I proved everyone wrong, so I'm very happy about that. So it's an enjoyable show in general. The main downside was that Otis didn't win for Team SmackDown. That's the only bad thing about it. But that's personal gripes. I thoroughly enjoyed the show. It was a very well developed show for the whole way through.
See, I've not watched Raw and SmackDown properly in a long, long time. I watched the pay-per-views, but most of my time is spent watching older stuff, whether it's looking back at pay-per-views for the podcast, or just older stuff in general, because that's what I watch. Or I watch a lot of AEW with my girls, my daughters. So yeah, Raw and SmackDown itself, I've not seen a great deal of in quite a while. But I watch the pay-per-view still, and I think on the whole this year, considering the global situation, we've had some pretty good pay-per-view events from the WWE.
There've been a couple of misses, unfortunately. Extreme Rules comes to mind.
Oh, yes.
but for the most part, they've been surprisingly good. Money in the Bank was a highlight for me, as was the two-day WrestleMania, the shirt for which I'm wearing right now, ironically. Yeah. I wasn't there for that one, nor was anybody, it seems. But Royal Rumble, obviously the start of the year, you forget that was in the days when we could actually get together and all that. And then the Chamber, of course. But even without that, also NXT has some great pay-per-views this year. War Games is coming up soon, so looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, and War Games being very much a stable of old Jim Crockett Promotions, NWA, and so on. That's right up my street, so I really enjoy the War Games matches as well. And I'm a big Adam Cole fan, big Undisputed Era fan, so all that's great. And, well, not as big an Adam Cole fan as my wife. She thinks this guy is fantastic. I'm not sure that's completely based upon his wrestling ability, but, you know, she is a big wrestling fan, so I think that does come into it.
A lot of people would say that I'm the same, just for Adam Cole for Finn Balor, but Finn Balor is incredibly talented, and he has got some very nice abs. It's true.
Fair enough.
It's true.
Fair enough. I've probably got some too somewhere, but they're just under a lot of fat. But
I could probably say, although I am on my weight loss plan, I've lost 5 pounds. I'm down to the Undertaker's weight now, so I'm very happy with that. I need to lose Spike Dudley's weight now to get down to what I want to be.
Is that how you're looking at it? Is it wrestlers' weights as steps?
That's, you know what, it's, you know, for me, as a wrestling fan, that's a great way of doing it, because it's a target to set yourself. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, I want to get down to that person's weight, then to that person's weight, because it gives you a focus point. And when you've tried so hard for so many years to try and lose weight, that's a great one for me, personally. So my next goal is to try and get underneath 300 pounds.
Okay. Excellent.
So depending on when this comes out this Friday, you'll find out.
No worries. I think this will be coming out this coming Thursday, so the day before. So
it'll be tomorrow, then you'll find out tomorrow if you listen to it when it goes out.
Excellent stuff. Okay then, mate. Shall we have a little look back in time at Survivor Series 2001 and the whole end of the invasion angle, I guess?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, it was initially broadcast on pay-per-view on November the 18th, 2001. Oddly, considering it was very much a WWF versus Alliance pay-per-view, the ending of that storyline, it came from the Greensboro Arena in North Carolina, which is very much a Jim Crockett Promotions WCW stable, hosted numerous Starcades and so on. And there was just over 10,000 in attendance. As a general overlook, overview of the whole show, what's your initial thoughts looking back on this pay-per-view?
To quote Jim Ross at the start of the show, this could be the most significant pay-per-view extravaganza in the history of our business. Obviously, it wasn't, because that, technically speaking, was a month before. This was the combination of an angle which was unfortunately poorly booked. In looking back, it was at a time we didn't know that. I mean, I personally enjoyed the invasion angle. I think they did the best that they could with the card they had dealt. But Survivor Series itself, it was a culmination of so many different things, and you got things you would never expected a year previously. I mean, if we'd been watching this at the time, 2001, and I said to you, the main event, you're going to have Rob Van Dam and Booker T on one side, and you're going to have Rock and Chris Jericho on the other, you'd have told me, what the hell are you smoking?
Very true.
But it happened. It happened.
Yeah.
We got some dream matches, although we didn't get as many dream matches because most of the big stars didn't transition over, but some of them did, and some of them got a chance.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I enjoyed the invasion angle as it happened. I think it's more, again, I suppose it's maybe internet negativity or whatever. Look back and think, you hear about people saying that it was like completely botched in the booking and this, that, the other. I mean, there were issues there, don't get me wrong. But I agree with you. I think it was very much a case of they did what they could with what they had available to them. They weren't going to get the likes of Steiner and Goldberg and Sting and all these other names across, which would have made a huge difference. Of course they would. But they weren't going to pay the money to get them out of their contract. Some of these guys simply didn't want to work. Some of them they didn't want as well. So what they did with what they had at the time, watching it on weekly, as opposed to looking back as a block, watching it every week, I quite enjoyed it. And I think we got certain things that people overlook as well. Steve Austin's kind of paranoid, edgy, insecure heel character, leader of the Alliance. I think he'd, as a good guy as well. Jim Ross on together again was superb. I really enjoyed that pairing. I think there's a lot of positives to come from that whole invasion angle, and I think there's a lot of positives to come from this pay-per-view as well. And one of them being that fantastic open with the black and white footage, and I think it's Freddie Blassie sat there talking and running through just the very dramatic open to the pay-per-view, the little, sort of little mini movie they put on. I think WWE do these things incredibly well.
Where they did it with the Armageddon music in the background as well, which was, and it did, and it was a case of the end is here, and
exactly, yeah.
You generally felt like it was going to be something, well, to quote Jerry Lord from year before, something bad always happens at Survivor Series. That's what they say. And there's usually a double cross, or some form or other. It's always something huge that goes down there. Something huge did go down, of course, in the main event, which we'll get to.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I really enjoyed that. And then you come to Jim Ross and Heyman on commentary, bickering back and forth as they would do throughout the whole show. And again, I really enjoyed this pairing. I'm a big Heyman fan. Jim Ross to me is, because of the era I've grown up in, he's very influential to me. You hear the phrase thrown around for different people, but to me, Jim Ross is the voice of wrestling. I think I love the guy. For AEW at the moment, it's more so, not potentially, I don't think he's doing anything wrong, but not potentially his performance, but being able to sit with my 10-year-old daughter and listen to Jim Ross calling matches with her is a big deal for me. But I think this pairing was great.
I get that. At the time, it was Jim Ross was the man, mm-hmm. and Paul Heyman had transitioned beautifully to a commentator, and he had done a fantastic job. I think a lot of people will still hearken to the night after, which obviously had the King return and take his place alongside JR. In recent years, and I've not been shy about this, Jim Ross should have stayed retired, in my personal opinion, because I think some of the things he said on commentary in recent times have been, let's put it this way, are very, I think they would have called it Attitude Era-esque, and maybe leave it at that.
Right.
I also feel that sometimes you just need to know when it's time to call it a day. His legacy is, you know, incalculable. He literally is the greatest sports entertainment commentator of all time. And I'm not talking about business, any business. You can go to American football. You can go to football itself in the UK and across the world. You can go to golf, cricket, anything. There are icons that do the job of announcing what's happening to the fans. Jim Ross did that arguably better than anybody else. But he should have stopped when he retired, in my personal opinion. But that's not what we're talking about. And this event, Jim Ross and Paul Heyman's commentary was the cornerstone to it. They got across everything. You could tell the passion was there because Jim Ross did not know what was going to be happening. We all knew that WWE was going to win out in the end of the show. Because that was them getting the W back after Invasion, of course. But you also knew that you didn't know how we were going to get there. And the people who were going to tell the story were going to be Jim Ross and Paul Heyman, the best two in the business for doing it at the time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's, as they got more and more agitated towards each other as the show progressed, and as they, I suppose, bickering turned into arguing and developed into a, them being, you know, quite agitated, quite angry towards the point we reached the main event. The comedy level rose for me as well because of that. Hearing that and Heyman's random bad Jim Ross impressions, trying to wind him up about his accent and stuff. Just absolutely great stuff. The first match we come to is obviously the European Championship is the opener of the show. Mm-hmm. Christian defending against Al Snow. One big thing about this match that I especially wanted to comment on, because I mean it was a decent enough opener. It did the job. I mean, it doesn't sort of stand out to me as being particularly memorable. I didn't remember this was on the event until I actually pressed play.
Really?
But for me, I totally forgot about this match.
This was one of my standout matches from the night.
Oh, okay.
Personally, it showed Al Snow could still go, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm a big Christian fan as well. I think the guy's very, very solid in the ring. I think sometimes he gets a little bit overlooked because of how successful Edge was, and Edge was obviously had a big star quality to him. But one thing that really stood out to me as well is just how much I love that championship title. I'm a big belt geek, and even though I don't actually own any replicas because, you know, money and life get in the way, but...
I know all about championship belts, unfortunately. I remember when I went to WrestleMania last year, everyone knows I bought a championship belt, the same belt which Kofi would win that night from Daniel Bryan. And it was $415. Why? On Negate. I'm not sure how much that is in pounds. I remember once I was in the stands, they put adverts up obviously in the arena during the show, and it actually said 25% off titles all if with this code. I'm like, you son of a bitch. but I've also seen you can get the European Championship replica on the WWE shop at the moment, I believe. And I believe it's about £350, which is about $400 US. Which is not too bad, seeing as it's a exact replica and it's a thing of absolute beauty. And
oh, that belt is gorgeous, isn't it? With the flags and everything. It's just fantastic.
They should bring them into NXT UK.
Yes. Yes, what a great shape. That'd be fantastic. I mean, I reckon it's a really... Some of the belt designs now, I'm not a huge fan of. But that and European title, I think that's great.
And think of all the greats who have held that championship over the years.
And Shawn Michaels, for a start.
Triple H, the British Bulldog.
Yeah.
The Hearts. Eddie Guerrero, of course, bless him. Chris Jericho. Kurt Angle. Of course.
Yeah.
Midian even reactivated after Shane McMahon won it and then retired it. You had William Regal, of course, Jeff Hardy, Spike Dudley, and of course the last champion, which was Rob Van Dam.
Mm. So many great names associated with that belt.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, definitely. I'll have to go back and watch some old matches now.
One thing which turned out to me a little bit, which you won't see on the network version of this, is because obviously, contract rights have changed, but on the DVD, it's the same. The Al Snow doesn't use his "What Does Everybody Want?" music. He uses the Tough Enough theme at the time, which, of course, Maven went on to use when he won Tough Enough, because he was the head trainer of Tough Enough, and he was this whole match came about because Christian ran into him backstage during Heat, and they had a confrontation, so that's why this match happened on the show. And I love the fact that they actually, on the original DVD release, they've actually still got the Tough Enough theme being played over the Al Snow Titantron. And it's a banger.
It's a great banger. Yeah, I remember Maven using it, yes. And then obviously that time he eliminated The Undertaker from the Rumble, and then got destroyed and thrown in the popcorn machine and so on. But that tune and the vision of the brick logos, I guess, smashing on the Titantron behind as they come in. Yeah, totally. Fantastic song. I mean, so many great entrance themes around at this time as well. Brilliant stuff. Obviously, Christian goes on to retain here, but at one stage, Al Snow hits his, I believe it's called the Snowplow.
Basically the Emerald Fusion, yes.
It looked absolutely brutal, didn't it? It looked absolute killer in this match. It just, it's a brutal move anyway, don't get me wrong. But on this occasion, you sort of looked at it and went, oh, streif.
For those who aren't familiar with Snowplow, it's basically a combination between a power slam and a pile driver, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Snowplow is appropriate because when people got hit with that, they went down, they stayed down. Christian obviously got his foot on the rope, so that's how he got out of it, so...
Yeah, and then he hits the Unprettier. Again, that's a brutal-looking move. I'm a big fan of that move. I've always enjoyed whoever's using that. It's a great finisher, I think. And then Christian obviously retained the championship.
Yes, he did. He did.
And then we go to our first sighting of one of the most important players of this era, and the Attitude Era in general, I guess. Stone Cold Steve Austin arrives in the arena, has a little chat backstage with his Alliance teammates, and they're all sort of second-guessing each other because Vince McMahon, in the build-up to the pay-per-view, has sowed seeds of doubt in the mind of some of the Alliance members about somebody turning and joining Team WWF, and was smiling at Austin, and Austin was smiling back as they went off the air going into this pay-per-view on the weekly television. I think this story of there's a mole or there's a turncoat or a traitor or some description added a little bit extra to the main event, because you were kind of thinking, okay, they're pointing towards Austin, which means it's not going to be him. Is there someone? Is there anyone? And if it is, who is it going to be? It's just another little layer to the storytelling, I think.
Absolutely, of course. They were also saying, cause obviously, Austin going the whole DTA, don't trust anybody thing for his career. And of course, on this. Taz, the term as a DTA now stands for Don't Trust Austin.
Yes.
And I
love the fact
I don't know if it was ad libbed or if that was scripted. Not entirely, probably ad libbed. It was really, really well done, and that made it a soundbite later in the show, of course. You did think, like, is Vince just messing? Or is Vince being, or is Vince serious? Is Austin really going to turn his back on the Alliance?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Again, fantastic storytelling, and for an era where they are, in hindsight, criticised a lot, I mean, it's little touches like that, they get overlooked unfairly, really. And the next match we had was supposed to be initially the first of the sort of title unification matches, I guess. The theme being that if you're holding a championship, regardless of which team won the main event, you would keep your job because you're a champion. Mm-hmm. So you had various unification matches like the IC title and the US and so on. This was initially supposed to be Tajiri facing X-Pac to unify the light heavyweight and the cruiserweight championships. But Sean Waltman, I believe he was injured at the time to mean he couldn't make the show. And it basically got switched to wrestling against Tajiri facing William Regal. Very short 3-minute match, wasn't it? Very quick and over quickly. I'm a big Regal fan. He ends up a bit of a mess. He ends up with his face getting a bit bloodied, doesn't he? But how did you find this kind of, I suppose, very quick encounter?
It was quick. It was quick. It was painless. It was good. Because Tajiri, one of my favourites as well.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
Yeah, I'd never heard of Yoshi Tajiri until he popped up before King of the Ring this year, and then became an instant fan, especially with Tarantula and the Mist and the Buzzsaw Kick. I mean, Tajiri was amazing, and then of course his handspring back elbow, which
yes.
became legendary. Of course, he was phenomenal. I do remember Mick Foley saying, because obviously at this point he was the commissioner again, appointed by Linda McMahon. He actually said, "God knows where X-Pac is right now, so screw him." Basically, I'm like,
yeah.
"I'm like, that's cold."
Yeah,
cold, but X-Pac heat, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Again, like I said, I'm a big fan of Regal, and this 3-minute match, I suppose, is, you know, it's not enough time really to judge the encounter or whatever fairly. But I do kind of think, to see X-Pac versus Tajiri would have been superb. I'd have enjoyed it again at this juncture, but obviously wasn't to be.
We did see some of them, to be fair.
Yeah, they wrestled in the past, yes. Yeah, but I mean, champion versus champion, I suppose, with all the unification belts, this would have been quite a stage for them potentially. But I mean, Regal comes in, and again, like I said, I'm a big Regal fan, so it's just nice to see him on the show. And he's comedy as well, isn't he? As well as being fantastic in the ring. So.
He's always been good at comedy stuff, always has been. Anyone who doesn't think that, just look up Goldust versus William Regal in a Las Vegas show gold match. But he loves this stuff.
It's absolutely fantastic, isn't it? He's brilliant. He is so good. Following on from that, we had another unification match between Test and Edge for, I suppose, the secondary titles in the two main companies, the United States Championship from WCW. Again, another beautiful-looking title against the Intercontinental Championship from the WWF. You've got two guys here whose careers, I suppose, went completely different ways, but at one stage there was high hopes for the pair of them. I mean, Test very much looks like a WWF, WWE guy. He's got the long hair, he's very put together, he's a tall fella, he's got the size and everything. And of course, Edge, you know, went on to have this fantastic career he had. What did you think of the match initially? But also, no longer with us now, Andrew Martin, Test, of course, he passed away at a very young age. What are your memories of Test, and why do you think it didn't just quite work out for him?
Before I get to that, I wanted to Edge had a good little primary for a match, actually. He was asked by the coach what he thought his chances were of beating Test were. He's like, the difference between, it must have been pretty even. I mean, we're both athletic, tall, long blonde hair, and pretty unique first names.
Yeah.
The difference between Test and I is, he's been dumped by virtually every chick on the planet. Obviously, that's like a Stephen McMahon now, obviously. Like, Ted isn't going to hit me with his big boot. It's going to be because of I lost what the hell is that all about? And then he gurned at the camera a couple of times. And this match, I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people talk about the King of the Ring being his breakout as a single star. This is the match which showcased that he could not only go, but he was capable of making a championship mean more than it had meant for a while. Because he'd been the IC champion right up until maybe 2 weeks before when Test, quote, cheated to win the championship. The weird thing is that after this event, Test actually got sort of like a push, a sort of cyber push anyway, because he couldn't be quite, because spoilers, he couldn't be fired.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
After for a year. So he started getting pushed. He culminated, as it were, with a little bit of a feud against The Rock leading up to the end of the year. And after that, his career kind of was like, he was always the nearly guy. He nearly got there. Mm-hmm. He had so much potential. But to quote Jim Ross again, you can't buy breakfast with potential. You've got to get the job done. And unfortunately, for one reason or another, I don't know why. I mean, he had his demons and other things, of course, but for some reason he didn't get the job done. No. I enjoy a lot of the matches I've seen him in. He did one of the greatest segments on Raw the following year when they almost burned the American flag, and he could draw heat. He could really draw heat. He knew how to work a crowd at Test. Unfortunately for him, though, it just didn't work out for him. And, you know, my thoughts are obviously with his family. But this match here was a phenomenal match. Edge did a great job, and Edge ended up hitting the execution, of course, and walking out with the US Championship belt, and in my opinion, the greatest Intercontinental Championship belt of all time.
See, we're going to disagree a little bit here, and I'm not a fan of that oval title.
Everyone disagrees with me on this one, but I personally think that is the best IC belt, because that's the one I relate to, because that's the first one I saw.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So for me, that's what the IC title belt looked like. It's just like the World Tag Team Championships, which we'll get on to in a minute. They were the championship belts, which I remember them having the first time I saw them. The Winged Eagle, that's the first, the big Winged Eagle belt. That's what I remember. Yeah. At the WWE Championship belt. I remember the European belt. I remember the Hardcore belt, the Women's Championship as it was then. Both of the belts that, for me, are the belts, because, and whenever I'm playing on the wrestling game, I create my own brand and I make them belts, the belts. Because for me, they were the ones. That is just me.
No, that makes perfect sense. I totally get that. I mean, for me, the first IC belt I remember is the one that it was the more sort of straighter shape, the more sort of cornered shape. The one that Brett wore, Shawn Michaels wore, the Warrior before that, Rick Reed before that, around that same sort of time and so on.
Oh,
and again, I think it's because that's what I remember, I guess.
Yeah. Everyone relates to a certain championship belt based on the era they started in.
Yeah, of course. That makes perfect sense.
Also give a shout out to the amazing theme song, which Edward using, of course, was Never Gonna Stop by Rob Zombie. But also, in fact, the Test song actually was really quite good.
Yes.
It was so simple. Test, this is a test.
Yep.
And
it sort of sticks in your head after you've finished watching the show and you sort of walk around humming something. I was humming something, making my kids dinner, and I was like, what the bloody hell is that? And I twigged it was the Test entrance theme sort of stuck in my head. So
simple. Jim Johnson, again, at his best. That's on WWE Music Volume 4, I believe.
Okay. Look at that knowledge, eh?
I have my moments.
No, I mean, with regards to Test as well, it's... He went through the Un-Americans gimmick, which again was drawing a great deal of heat. With Christian was involved in that as well, wasn't he? He had this on again, off again feud with Scott Steiner after Steiner's main event run kind of petered out, and it involved like battling for Stacy Keibler's services and so on. But yeah, it was almost like it was almost constantly like there was just something missing. They couldn't quite put your finger on what exactly it was. And it's a real shame. I mean, I believe he was like 32, 33 when he passed, which is no age at all, is it? It's, you know, incredibly sad.
It was.
But yeah, I mean, again, I enjoyed the match too. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Because I suppose I'm used to thinking of Test in those roles where it didn't quite work, I didn't really know what to think going into this match when it started, but at the end of it, I was pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, I can't disagree with you at all there. Next up then, we have another title unification match. The Hardys versus the Dudleys in a cage, unifying the WWF and WCW tag team titles. There's a bit of an odd thing going on here with the belts. Did you notice this as they were coming down?
I did notice this, but before
we're talking a lot about belts today, aren't we?
well, to be fair, there was a lot of belts on the show, which is really yes. All the unification matches. Before this, of course, Stephanie was moaning to Kurt Angle about if she had to, if they lost, they'd have to become a regular person and have to scrub a toilet. And I'm like, you usually heard the audience go, oh, as if being sarcastic. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, everybody wants to see the billion-dollar princess get a real job.
She's a heat magnet, isn't she?
Oh, she's always been good at creating heat, ever since she turned on Vince back in 99. Right. The thing you're talking about here is, of course, going into the match, the Dudleys held the WCW Tag Team Championships, and the Hardy Boys held the WWE Tag Team Championships. Thing is that someone didn't tell that to the production company properly. Because coming down the aisle, the graphics were the wrong way around for who was who champions. And I was like, no one I've ever spoken to before in the last 19 years has noticed that, apart from you.
Oh, really?
You're the first person to actually notice that, apart from me, in 19 years. Or if you have noticed it, haven't brought it up in conversation.
Yeah, no, I understand. No, I get it. It's just odd. I'm sort of looking at it, and I had to rewind it a couple of times, and the wife was sat there watching with me, and she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm looking at the belts. And again, she just looked at me and rolled her eyes a little bit, and I was like, no, there's something there. I can't quite place my finger.
And then it clicked, and you explained it to her.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the belts the Hardys were wearing as well, they looked unfinished. They looked like they weren't... I don't know whether they were belts that they were just wearing for that occasion, but they didn't look finished. They didn't look like they'd been colored in, I suppose, for want of a better term. You know, it's just a real odd look.
Incomplete,
yes.
Almost.
Yes, there you go. That's excellent. That's the word I was searching for. Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, the match itself, you've got to both members of the team have got to escape from the cage. Or it's via pinfall, isn't it, and submission to win. But it seems strange being in a cage match and they've got a tag in and out.
When you put the Hardys and the Dudleys in a match together, you're going to create magic.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen them compete in every kind of match before, apart from a cage match. So, you know, it was a little odd seeing the tagging in and out. It didn't last very long, of course. It ended up being Tornado, which is how it should have been in the first place.
Yes, definitely.
But, of course, the ace in the hole, as it was the Duchess of Dudleyville on the outside, of course.
I'm a big fan of young Miss Keebler, yeah.
She's got legs and she knows how to use them. she, of course, at one point during the match, because normally when... It's after Devon's hit the diving headbutt, obviously, into somebody's groin. Mm-hmm. Bubba will tell him to get the tables. But out of nowhere, Bubba just shouted, "Stacy, get the tables." And then proceeded to use her womanly ways to distract Nick Patrick, though he didn't like you too bother to face it, into getting the keel of him so she could put a table into the ring. And from then on, the rest wrote itself.
Yep, we had Jeff making a bad decision. Obviously, Matt was already escaped the cage, I suppose. They're just awaiting Jeff to complete that and escape his team. He's on top of the cage, and in true Jeff Hardy style, he can't resist a crazy stunt. Rather than escaping and winning, he throws himself off the top of the cage and effectively costs his team the win.
Yeah, Steve Von Dudley laying on top of the table in the ring, and Jeff went for the ultimate swanton. To be fair, he nailed the swanton, nailed the table. Steve Von wasn't in the middle, though.
No, exactly. I believe this started to lead up to the
it did.
The split between the two, didn't it?
And it did. It was perfectly planted. The seeds were perfectly planted. It also didn't help because obviously backstage, before this match, you had Matt Hardy come out of Trish's locker room.
Yes. Lita sort of looking a bit confused about what was going on there.
We're not confused, but more like concerned. And I wonder if Lita was thinking that given what happened in 4 years' time. Of course. So, but overall, yeah, good match. It was a quarter of an hour long and it served its purpose perfectly.
Yeah, definitely. And again, it sowed the seeds for what was to come with the Hardy Boys. I think that's their initial split and storyline through that sort of time period. It didn't quite hit right for me. I don't know why. I don't know whether it was too early or, I mean, they've been together a long time by this point, but I don't know. So it just wasn't quite right about that feud at that time. But the setup for it here, as you said, it worked perfectly to sort of put that in motion, shall we say.
Yeah.
After the tag match, we had something that I find quite interesting, considering that we're looking at the WWF or the Alliance, the WCW, ECW Alliance. One of them has to effectively go out of business. One of them is going to be no more after tonight, as the tagline keeps saying.
Yeah.
We then get an advert for future WWF shows. To me, it was a little bit... I understand that everyone kind of knows that the WWF is going to win. There's no way McMahon's not going to have his brand go over here, of course. But I'm just sort of sat there watching, and I didn't notice it initially when I watched it 19 years ago. I only noticed this week. But an advert popping up for future WWF shows, future tours, future Raw tapings. When obviously in an hour or two, they could be out of business.
To be fair, they had been teasing it throughout the night with William Regal obviously bumping into the McMahon's backstage.
Mm-hmm.
Actually said that tomorrow night, once they'd won, it would be the first Alliance Raw. So the Alliance would have just taken over those tours, those shows, etc. like that. So I wouldn't have read too much into that at the time.
No, that's a good point. Again, at the time, watching it 19 years ago and subsequently, I've not really picked up on that. It was just on this occasion I was like, oh, right, okay. But now you've explained it that way, that makes a lot more sense.
Mm.
I don't know why, but maybe because I've watched a great deal of it recently. In my head, I was thinking Nitro would be on this occasion as opposed to the Alliance taking over Raw. But as you explained that, that does make perfect sense. Yeah, that was just me not paying attention.
Yeah, to be fair, a lot happening.
Yeah. Next up, we had a Battle Royal, which I'm a fan of these sort of matches if they're done correctly and not overused. If you see too many of them, obviously it becomes far too similar. You're seeing the same sort of things on a regular basis.
I can vouch for that. WrestleMania weekend, I went to 6 events.
Okay. And
every single event had a battle royal or a Royal Rumble or some description. And every single one had someone hide under the ring until the end of the match.
Every
single one.
Why? So you saw the same format with the same finish?
Same format, same finish with several different companies.
That's incredible.
And they weren't the same place. A couple of them were the same place, but Norman, I went to GCW, I went to Black Label Pro, I went to Shikara, I went to Ring of Honor and New Japan at Madison Square Garden, I went to WrestleMania, I went to Capital, I went to 6 different events held by 6 different organizations, and all of them had, at some point in the Battle Royal, someone was out of a ring until the end of the match.
That's incredible.
Trope which actually happened in this match.
Unbelievable.
Happened in this match as well, of course, which we'll talk about right now. The idea that the winner gets immunity. But as they're all making their entrance, of course, they've got the Alliance guys walking down with Let the Bodies Hit the Floor blaring, because that was the Alliance's theme song, and amazing song, absolutely amazing song. And while they're in the ring, you've got Heyman sitting on commentary saying, like, you should get up and up into this one, JR, maybe keep your job. You could hold Jonathan Coachman's coat or something. I'm like, But that, again, was playing into it so nicely.
It's adding to the story all the time, isn't it? I mean, they're effectively the same track for what we're watching on the screen, of course. And it can be like, I suppose, commentating by numbers, naming moves and so on. But those little touches like that, adding personality and conflict between the two, I think really, again, like we said earlier on in the show, really, really adds to the story. They absolutely fantastic. They added so much to this event, Heyman and Jim Ross.
Because it was getting so tense at this point, because we were only a couple of hours away from the end of one of these companies.
Yes.
So the tension was in the air. And if obviously, I mean, looking back now, it's obvious, but obviously at the time, I was a tiny child at the age of 17 years old. So, you know, I didn't know what was going to go down.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was a touch older, and I mean, 2001, I'd have been fast approaching 21 at this stage. Yes, but yeah, just coming up to my 21st birthday. Mm. But I was the same. I think the storytelling was done so well. Again, I suppose you kind of knew deep down on some level, but I bought into it completely. I was really excited about what was going to happen, and the fact that obviously McMahon owned everything at this point, you could have had it that the WWF lost and went a different direction. You know, somehow or another. But again, not very likely to happen. But, you know, you never know. You know, I suppose it's that uncertainty that creates the interest.
Ironically, they actually did that in a video game a few years ago, actually, where WWE did win. And WWE then would win a few weeks later to regain control. So the what if has been played out in video game land. Before this match, of course, there was an altercation backstage, of course.
Ah, yes, Scotty Too Hotty.
One of my favourites of all time, and thankfully now cancer-free, of course.
Yeah, he's obviously entering into this immunity battle royal, as so many other people are, trying to secure their job, regardless of who wins the main event. Test, obviously, has lost his unification match to Edge earlier on, as we discussed. And he decides, you know what, I'm going to take your spot, Scotty. I'm going to go into the battle royal myself. Gives him a bit of a beating backstage, comes out sort of trailing the Alliance team, enters the Battle Royal, and I suppose in a way it kind of preempts who's going to win when you're watching.
Yes, but at the same time, it also, I'm like, you didn't need to beat him up, because as we'll talk about in a moment, you didn't necessarily need to be announced to enter this Battle Royal.
Okay, just literally turn up.
As proven with three of your people who were fired by the Alliance and were still able to still enter the match anyway.
Yeah.
Obviously, Tess entered the Battle Royal. But also, as the WWE guys then followed him down to the ring, Albert made a beeline for Tess, because obviously Albert had been teaming with Scotty recently. And then, of course, being became hip-hop, obviously, later on. which is
what
still
a great name.
Which is one of my favourite personas that Albert ever had. Thank you, Matt Bloom, so much for embracing that. He made a beeline for Tess, obviously, and they obviously brawled, and then obviously a truckload of people had to get Albert out of the ring in the end. It was a fun battle royal. It really, really was. And then, of course, we saw Taz marching down the aisle.
Yeah.
And Paul Heyman losing his absolute mind. Like, what the hell is he doing here?
Yeah. Of course, he had a bit of an altercation with Heyman in the weeks building up, didn't he? Maybe even the week building up.
It was literally three days before on SmackDown when Heyman decided to cut that amazing promo on Vince, which Vince had no idea about beforehand.
No, he just said to him, just say whatever, didn't he?
Make the money.
I'm like, absolutely.
All he did, he made Vince a absolute shit ton of money that night. I'm very pleased with, because after Taz got eliminated, Heyman started laughing until Taz then slammed his hands on the announce table, and then Heyman gets out of his chair and hides behind Jim Ross. And then JR says, unfortunately, a little bit unfortunate, where he says, what are you doing, you woman? I'm like,
Yeah.
I mean, no, it was just acceptable. It was of its place in time, unfortunately.
Yeah, it doesn't age well, does it? There's like a lot of stuff from sort of around that time.
But then Heyman, did some great mic work afterwards. After Taz had gone, you can Heyman's voice very faintly saying, like, is he gone?
Brilliant. He's absolute gold, isn't he?
Reminds me of Heenan back in the day.
Yes.
Bobby Heenan, perfectly, with Gorilla Monsoon. That was perfect.
Can play the comedy side, can play the serious side, can endorse the characters he needs to endorse. Absolutely superb. Yeah, it's a real good comparison there. I mean, Heyman, I think, comes across a little bit more edgy at times.
Oh, yes.
I remember Heenan being maybe leaning more towards the comedy side in his later years, especially in WWF.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
But I can see the similarities there, definitely. That's a real good comparison, yes.
I mean, he also had Charlie Guerrero and Hugh Morris, and I hate that. Your name is Hugh Morris. You think that's funny? You think that's humorous? Obviously, it turns out the guy was an absolute piece of trash afterwards. But him and Chavo, of course, I recognize the name Guerrero. I thought, is he there to Eddie, do you reckon? Because obviously Eddie was gone at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, turned out, of course, yes, they were related. So obviously, these are two guys who were fired by Alliance and then were thrown out of the ring eventually. Yeah. And of course, it came down to the one Billy Gunn and the man who deserves so much more, and that was Test.
Yeah, definitely. And again, two very much WWE guys, I suppose, or WWF guys, I guess, at the time. When you look at them, we already mentioned about Test and his appearance and how that would tick a lot of boxes for McMahon. Billy Gunn as well was another one who had a lot of success in tag teams, I guess. They tried to push him as a single star. Again, I mean, he's got the height, he's got the build, he's got the look. But again, it never worked for him as a singles wrestler. He had a few intercontinental title reigns, but never really kicked on from there, I suppose.
I wouldn't be saying kicked there, because Billy Gunn obviously was setting up for the famous, and mm-hmm. as he went to deliver it, of course, that's when Test hit the big boot over top rope. And then you see Test obviously celebrate, and then even the WWE referee, who dropped the ring to put his arm up in the air, he wouldn't let him do it in his own course. And you hear Heyman just lose it, like, Test wins! No matter who wins, no matter who loses, the Alliance will win. No matter who loses, the Lions will win. Test did his job for a year. The Lions will win.
Again, just adding more and more to it. With comedy, again, so like the difference between how angry and aggressive they can be to each other on commentary, especially towards the main event. But the comedy side from Heyman as well, just absolute gold. The guy's an absolute star. I think he was a star throughout this whole angle, but this night in particular, he's so good.
Yeah.
I mean, following the sort of multi-person match there, the next actual in-ring moment is another multi-person match, I guess. We have six competitors facing off for the women's title. Molly Holly, Ivory, Lita, Jacqueline, Trish, and Jazz, who came to the ring as a bit of a surprise at the time. A very odd kind of tag in and out format, I suppose, similar to what we discussed about the steel cage match earlier. Very odd sort of tag in and out format.
You say odd. This was a six-pack challenge,
yes.
Which obviously was introduced at Unforgiven 99 with Austin as the enforcer, where it was a case of basically a six-person match, two in the ring, and you tag in and out. And it worked for that day, and they figured the title had been vacated by China. We need to put it on somebody, and whoever holds the championship will be an undisputed champion. So, obviously, you had Molly Holly, who was in her Mighty Molly persona, obviously for the Alliance. You had Lita, one of the best high-flying females of all time. Jack Quinn, obviously earned her spurs for years, would go on to be a referee after this as well. Jazz, as you said, even though JR didn't know who it was, then, quote, so I go, how is it was Jazz? And then, so Fane didn't know who it was. And then as soon as the match started, he actually said, from what I know, from what I've heard, she can actually go for men as well. I'm like, then you know who it is, you idiot.
Yeah.
But, of course, we've also got Ivory, who is obviously a Hall of Famer. But this match was all about the arrival of someone that when you saw who was in this match beforehand, she's the one person you would have put no money on. I give you the 7-time eventually women's champion Trish Stratus. I've written an article about Trish, about the females in professional wrestling around this time on Chops, Kicks and Near Falls. And Trish Stratus, Lita, Jacqueline, Molly Holly, Ivory, they defined the Attitude Era when it came to women's wrestling. Trish Stratus, when we first became aware of her about a year previously, maybe a bit before, maybe 18 months beforehand, we knew her as a bimbo. We knew her as she'll flash her boobs at you to get what she wants sort of thing.
Yeah, she was a valet as well. Yeah, and very much that sort of arm candy, I suppose, for want of a better term. Yeah.
And at the start of the year, she was literally, for lack of no better terms, she was literally a sex toy for Vince McMahon.
Yeah, it's some uncomfortable viewing at the time. When you watch it back now, it's even worse.
It is. But then you see the payoff at WrestleMania 17 of how well that was done, and it all came to fruition. And then Trish became the women's champion in this match. She nailed the Stratisfaction, and wow. Her career just shot up.
Yeah, definitely.
You think about all people in this match, every single one of these people would hold the women's championship. But no one held it more times than Trish Stratus.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Trish as well is the level of improvement you saw again and again and again. Obviously here in ring, she's not anywhere near the performer that we would get in later years. Obviously, she's still very much learning her craft. But she improved every year, got hugely popular as the baby face or the good persona Trish. But then when she turned heel as well and did the whole thing with Chris Jericho and Christian many years later and played this kind of very arrogant upper self, I know how good I am kind of character, she was absolutely fantastic in that role too. And I'm a huge Trish fan. I mean, first of all, a younger me looking at Trish Stratus on the television every week, I didn't object to that in the slightest.
Easy sigh.
But watching her perform in ring, the characters she'd portray, just absolutely fantastic. She's been an absolute star and one of the greatest of all time, in my opinion.
Do you remember that episode of Are You Being Served where they had to say glass water Peter Granger because he's getting any flustered? That's you right now, Simon. Glass water for Simon right now because he's starting to sweat because the wife behind you, by the way.
she's fully, trust me, my wife Sharon, she's fully aware of my Trish Stratus opinions. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, it's okay. But to be fair, she's the sort of person who could kick your ass. And I mean the wife and Trish Stratus.
And in both cases, without a doubt.
This match launched Trish Stratus, but it also showed everyone who Jazz was. And Jazz would become such an important part of Trish's early days as women's champion, including having a fantastic, two fantastic matches in back-to-back WrestleManias, WrestleMania 18 and 19 with Trish. Both times, I believe, when Jazz walked in as champion 1 year and was a challenger the second year. It was fantastic to see Trish and Jazz work. It was phenomenal. And
she's only recently retired, hasn't she, Jazz?
Jazz, phenomenal. Jacqueline, obviously Hall of Famer. In fact, everyone apart from Jazz is a Hall of Famer. And Molly Holly. Molly Holly, who should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, without a fight.
Vince, answer my letters. Why is Molly Holly not in the Hall of Fame yet?
She should be without a doubt. I mean, you listen to so many other the ladies from that time as well, talking about how she helped train people and helped guide people in the ring and so on. She was a hugely important part for people, I suppose, like Trish, as they were learning their craft, to be around someone of that stature. Ivory as well. Ultimately, like we said, Trish wins the championship here. We then go to more Paul Heyman and Jim Ross on commentary, bickering back and forth and
you
so
know,
on.
You know, it's the end, right? Want to give me a hug? And then JR, JR says something which would be a permanent moment, like, no, I haven't been sanitized.
Like, absolutely brilliant.
I'm like, he's like, I'm not going to miss you at all. Who gives a damn?
Sat there with his Stone Cold Steve Austin or whatever his baseball cap on, hasn't he, at the time?
Mm.
Oh, this, so good.
This obviously kept going right through the entrances, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah. Beforehand, though, we had a rallying pep talk from Mr. McMahon to his troops, his team WWF. I flick back and forth on my opinion on this, depending on which day I watch it. Some days I watch it and I find it a bit cringe, a bit cheesy, but other times I watch it and I think, oh my word, this is just firing me up like mad. I feel like I want to go out and compete. What were your thoughts on this segment as McMahon really gave it the proper Vince-isms and you know, ran through the legends and so on?
Going through the legends made a big thing. Talk about, yes, Buddy Rogers, Gorilla Monsoon, Andre the Giant, and then looking in The Rock's face, in his face, and saying, "Hi, Chief Peter Maivia."
That moment is superb.
And then, you see the look on The Rock's face where he actually is so. He was already pumped up beforehand, but then he was really pumped up. And then Vince drops the bomb, like, "I want you to consider the notion that there's a traitor, complete and utter BS."
Yep.
Because, and I'm like, so is he lying then? Was he just stirring up? Or was he telling the truth? He says, "Oh, you consider it BS." Obviously, it turned out that he was telling the truth the whole time.
Yes. And again, it's just another layer to the story. And I think it's something that they miss sometimes in modern day product. These little layers they add and layers they add and on top and on top and on top. And by this stage, you don't know... Is someone coming across? Is somebody not? Has McMahon been making it up all along? Is it Austin? Is it somebody else? Is it anyone at all? It's just so many different layers to it.
The only thing about the whole thing, of course, is it was actually the most odd person.
Yes.
It was the oldest person in the world who it was. So for that, I say bravo to Vince for that. Because he did some great writing on that side of things. Then they ran the background promo to the event, and it just starts with the clouds rolling in. It says, "I've had it with Alliance crap, Fit Invasion crap." I'm like,
winner take all.
A lot of winner take all, and it was so well edited, and it ran through the whole angle turning on WF, Jericho turning on The Rock. And then, as you mentioned about Austin turning on the Alliance, apparently it was going to happen. And then, obviously, Shane giving his rallying cry, saying, like, "Set me up for everything we have on the line." And then, the weirdest thing about this is, why Bubba Ray Dudley slapped Angle on the shoulder? No idea why. That bugs me. It just bugs me. And then, obviously, it launches into Control by Puddle of Mud.
Oh, fantastic.
And you got JR doing the control. One match, winner take all. Both lives or the Alliance will live. The World Wrestling Federation will wipe the Alliance off the face of this earth. Vince McMahon will see the WWF die. And then it was just like montage of the people who were in the match. And then, of course, Sweetie Fool, you had Austin and Rock trying to dispel some of the tension by singing along. It's kind of surreal in itself. And then Rock, obviously, not forgetting what happened in WrestleMania. Like, by the way, The Rock will never, ever forget. And then drilled him with a rock bottom. And that was just amazing itself. And of course, it finishes that song, "You're not the one for me now, it's when I take all." And then you come out of that, and then you say, "Here comes the money." I'm like,
yeah. Oh, it's just it's built so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant.
They promo. In terms of promo stuff, Vince knows how, when a production team, they cut amazing promos, even back then. Because, of course, this was the first year they started using proper licensed songs on a regular basis.
Okay. And
it was sensational. In fact, the first one I remember was when they used Click, Click, Boom for No Mercy, I think, that year, the month before. Obviously, they'd written Mania, they'd done licensed song for this year. Obviously, they'd done My Way, which was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But they started ditching, like generic themes. They'd used actual licensed music, and it was great sponsorship for them. It was good promotion, whatever. It was brilliant in general. And I got a lot of my love for rock music from those sorts of songs. And then every single person making their way to the ring, of course. You had Van Damme wearing the hardcore belt, so you know Van Damme's safe no matter what happens.
Yep.
Austin entered with a WWF title belt, which means he's safe no matter what. And then, obviously, they run through Kane's wearing a special attire just for that one night, and I'm like, I like that attire as well. It's a shame he didn't wear it more often. Obviously, then Dead Man Inc. on his 11th anniversary rolled in, and with Limp Bizkit blaring and still brilliant. Although, JR does make a misquote here. He says, when he debuted, he won the WWF title against Hulk Hogan. No, he didn't.
No, that was the following year, wasn't it? 1991, yeah.
But in fact, he was caught up in the emotional moment. I can forgive that. But as Jericho began to enter, Heyman and JR are still slamming each other so much. JR said something, I forgot what it was off my head, but Heyman responds to it, and then JR says, "Jim Cornette can replace you tomorrow night, pal." I'm like, looking back now, I'm thinking like, no. Actually, no. And then Hayton says, "You're pretty funny if I'm unemployed, guy." And then obviously Jericho's entering. I was like, "If I am unemployed, I'll go to my own home, not go to my mum and daddy's room." And like, "That's made your special repairs in the freaking shack." I'm like, oh god!
It's just hyping it up more. Everything about it, the entrances as well. The one by one coming out rather than as a team, I think adds to this as well. It just builds and builds and builds. The crowd are getting hugely into it. I mean, Austin makes his entrance when the glass breaks, you know, to coin a phrase used often.
It is.
He gets a huge, almost babyface reaction from the arena. They love him.
And that theme song, they changed his theme song when he was on the alarm, of course. It was like a very different glass break, and it was bum 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 bum. And I've never been able to find a clean version of it. Never.
Okay.
In version of it. They did use it on the on X, which showed my age a little bit. That's the only game it was ever on. So, yeah. If you can find me a copy, guys, I'd appreciate it. At the Mattech UK, send it to me, please.
Yeah, definitely.
So this match, at this point, was already at the height, his height it could be.
And star power as well. Let's just run through. I know you've mentioned quite a few of them there, but let's just run through the actual sides. You've got Team Alliance, which is Shane McMahon, Rob Van Dam, Booker T, Kurt Angle, Steve Austin. I mean, that's an incredible collection of name value, star value, and talent as well.
Yes.
And then Team WWF, you've effectively got the biggest names they could muster that weren't already selected for Team Alliance in Big Show, Kane, The Undertaker, Chris Jericho, and then The Rock. Initially supposed to be Vince McMahon, but he had to remove himself from the match due to injury and replaced himself with The Big Show. But those 10 names, wow.
It does make you wonder, if they hadn't been injured, where would Triple H have been, and where would Chris Benoit have been?
Yes, very true. I mean, I'd have assumed that Triple H would have been Team WWF, Benoit, potentially Alliance, because of his past history.
But in the Triple company. H, his wife, of course.
Sorry, say that again?
But Triple H's wife, of course.
Yes, definitely, yeah, why?
So who knows? We'll never know.
It's interesting to think, though.
It is interesting to think on that sort of side of thing, because you know that they'd have been involved in this match somewhere. Who knows, unfortunately. But the match itself, if I had said to you the first person to be eliminated was the Big Show, you probably wouldn't have believed me at the time. And
took everyone's finishing move, didn't he?
He took
a great deal of them.
He didn't take a stunner. He took an angle slam, took a 5-star frog splash, took the scissors kick, and took the elbow drop. Didn't take a stunner though.
No, very true, very true. But still, you'd imagine 4 out of 5 would be enough, even if he's a 7-foot giant. You know,
it did take enough, thankfully for them. And then Shane got the same treatment from The Rock, Chris Jericho, The Undertaker, and Kane.
Yep. And it's a shame about Martin here as well. The first few minutes, whenever Team WWF would go for a cover, he'd be running in the ring and disturbing the pinfall attempt, disturbing the covering situation there, to the point where Jim Ross is, you can hear him slapping his desk and shouting, God damn it, for crying out loud, all that sort of stuff. And again, just added more and more.
I remember saying, damn, man. And also him saying, like, Shane McMahon is like a boil on the butt of life. I'm like, like, that is an amazing sentence.
Fantastic. That's brilliant. I'm stealing that. That's great.
A
couple of notes I've got from the match itself. Again, the reaction Austin gets is huge. It's probably the biggest of the night until Taker comes out a bit later on Team WWF. Shane breaking up these pinfall attempts and JR's frustrations were great. RVD at this stage, what a performer he was. What a talent this guy was. And he was doing things, obviously it's 2001 and we'd seen him for X amount of time previous, and maybe if you'd seen ECW at the time, I hadn't at this stage.
I wasn't even aware of who was on ECW roster at that time. So this was all fairly new to me. And then obviously I learned more. And wow.
Doing things that as a wrestling fan I'd never seen before from a guy of that size. Because he almost wrestled, I suppose, for want of a better term, in a cruiserweight style-ish.
But yes.
The guy's 235 pounds. He's 6'1". Mm. He's very much not a cruiserweight. But some of the things he was doing, I mean, the first time I saw him do a split-legged moonsault in the corner.
Yeah.
I'd never seen that before. And it literally, I just sat there, my mouth was open. I was like, what in the world have I just seen? And around this era, he quickly became one of my favourites to watch, just because he was doing things that I found breathtaking and new.
Rolling Thunder, another one.
Yes, definitely.
I mean, we've seen Eddie Guerrero do frog bashes, and we've seen D'Lo Brown and everything like that. But RVD, his frog bash was phenomenal. I think the only person that gets close now is Street Profits. The only one who gets close to that sort of frog splash. It's from the heavens, of course, but it's a frog splash, and it's phenomenal. And it's the only one who gets close to RVD and Eddie Guerrero's frog splashes.
Yeah, definitely. And I like as well, it's a little thing, but it makes, I think, a big difference. He hits that frog splash, and then he sells it himself.
Yes.
Such a little subtle thing, but it makes such a difference.
He sells it like he's just, well, mainly because most of the time he was frog splashing someone who had a chair on their chest or a hardcore belt on their chest.
Yeah, very true. Time.
But he also, a perfect example is, let's get forward a few months, WrestleMania 18, of course, where he beats Regal for the IC belt. And he almost drove Regal through the canvas, the height and the power he put through it. And he rolled around, kicked his legs a few times, and then rolled back into the cover, and he looked like he was in absolute agony. And he is one of the best sellers of his own move. I've never seen someone sell their own move that way before. Well done, sir.
Absolutely great stuff. I mean, there's so much that goes on in this match. It runs for, let's have a little quick check. Nearly 3/4 of an hour. Yeah.
It's 3 seconds short of 3/4 of an hour it was, yeah.
Absolutely brilliant stuff. I mean, I'm not going to... We simply haven't got time today to run through it blow by blow, elimination by elimination. But if anyone is looking for a wrestling match to watch this week, I highly recommend they seek out the main event from this show, because it is absolutely superb action all the way through. So much talent there. Absolutely. You have ref bumps.
So many different storylines tied in. You had Nick Patrick's rivalry with El Hebner pop up.
Yes,
which was fantastic as well. You had Jericho double crossing the Rock to extent where you actually had Undertaker come back and had to pretty much drag him back to the locker room so he wouldn't screw him again. Not so much screw the Rock, screw him. I mean, like, you're trying to screw the Undertaker. Have mercy.
Oh. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, as we get to the end of the match, we're left with The Rock and Austin, one of the greatest rivalries of all time. Seeing those two stand across the ring from each other after everything that had gone on in their careers.
Trading each other's finishers.
And the build-up as well, as you mentioned earlier, with the Rock will never forget moment and so on. Just so much history between these two absolute megastars to then be across the ring as the sole survivors each. Really set the tone.
The perfect finish for it, in a way, was to have the predictable double cross, but you see Angle run down to the ring and you see him grab the WWF title belt, which Austin had pulled in the ring to try and use, and then it had fallen out of the ring, of course. Because iconic scene there is when he's holding the belt, Rock traps him in the sharpshooter at Survivor Series, ironically. another great callback that was 2 years gone by. And Austin is clutching to the belt, and JR is selling that like it's the last night on earth. Like, Austin clutching to the championship. That is his life.
Yeah.
And the belt for that ring, Angle runs down, picks it up, and Heyman goes, "Here comes Kurt. Thank God." And then you hear JR brutally, "Son of a bitch." And then Angle clocks Austin in the face with the belt. The crowd erupts. He stumbles into the Rock Bottom. Down he goes. And then before Rock can get across, you can see the camera pans out, so Angle with a belt above his head walking through the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So he's taking the belt with him to re-refer into the woods. More storytelling there. And then JR selling every single part of that slow count by Hemner. The count! The count! It's over! It's over! The WWF has won it!
And then Heyman's reaction, just sitting there, mortified, and just everything about this main event is just so good.
Even everything Stephanie in the locker room. I mean, I know they obviously were doing it for the camera, but Stephanie selling it like literally her world had just ended.
Mm-hmm.
No! And then you got... Ironic thing is that you see... The Dudleys, obviously, who won the unification belts, Bubba's shouting at Stephanie, like, "What the hell is that?" And Bubba actually only had the WWF Championship belt on his shoulder at the time. Yes. Don't know if that was intentional, but he also then dropped the belt on the floor and picked it up quickly before the camera cut away. that was unfortunate. But also, you cut to the WWF locker room and you've got them all crowded around the very small monitor, and you've got Big Show very large in the frame going, "One!
Yeah.
Two!"
Reacting as he's watching it.
You've got Garcia saying, come on, guys, in the background, and you actually genuinely believe that some people weren't in the loop, and I love that, if that was the case.
Yeah, genuine reactions and stuff. Oh, brilliant.
And then you see at the end Vince on the stage throw his jacket on the ramp and just Vince McMahon victorious again. And probably the first time that anyone had ever cheered Vince McMahon for a long, long time.
Yeah, for quite a while. Since Survivor Series a few years back, I'd imagine.
And then the next night, of course. A new chapter began, didn't it?
Yeah. I was actually thinking about that earlier on before we press record. What I'd love to do, if you'd be interested at some point in the future, is maybe have a little look at that episode of Monday Night Raw.
I'd be the...
So, there, and the fallout from this fantastic Survivor Series event, I think you and me, having covered this pay-per-view, I think it'd be great to cover that show as well. I think
I'd love that. Generally,
I think that would be a great little follow up to this episode. What I'll do then, if that's the case, we'll get that all booked in and sorted out very soon. I'll collect your bin it, book it best on that occasion, if that's okay with you, sir.
That works for me, sir. Not a problem at all.
Excellent stuff. So, before I let you go then, this Survivor Series 2001 event, great moments, great matches, great memories, I suppose. Normally on the show, whenever I watch a pay-per-view with anybody, we kind of try and give it a grade, as in the old school grading system, I suppose.
Yeah.
Whereabouts would you personally grade this pay-per-view as a whole?
This is an A-minus for me.
Ah, see, I was going to say exactly the same thing.
This is a very close second to, because of the importance behind it, that's what elevates it so highly. It's a very close second to WrestleMania 17. Different. The reason why it falls behind it, WrestleMania 17 is an A++++.
Yes.
WrestleMania 17 had been building storylines for a year. This one had been building storylines for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, but even despite that, even despite only being a 6 month difference, they delivered in spades. And given how poor it's received, this was a fantastic way to tie the angle up and embark in the future, of course. And I think the fact that all the championships were consolidated, and of course, they even brought the US title back a few years later, of course, and the big gold belt as well.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, like, what was the point?
Very true. But at the time, obviously, you know, watching as a fan, we've just lost WCW in reality, the March of that year. It's just...
And ECW.
Yeah, and ECW, of course. And it's just... It felt like the biggest thing in the world at that time. If you really put yourself in that moment, if anyone goes back, if anyone's not seen this pay-per-view and goes back and watches, I encourage you to, first of all. It is an excellent, excellent show. But put yourself in that mindset of a wrestling fan in 2001, whilst you're watching, if it is for the first time. It felt like such a big deal, and that was even before the pay-per-view started. As the show went on, with the things that me and Matt had discussed, the commentary, the video packages, it just felt bigger and bigger and bigger right up until that huge, incredible main event. I agree with you. I think it is an A-minus show. Again, I agree with you. 17 is very much tip-top of my pay-per-views. There's a few others that I suppose go alongside it, but WrestleMania 17 is right up there. So when I'm rating a show, I always look at that as top rated and put the shows in comparison. An A minus, I think, is really accurate for this pay-per-view. I really enjoyed going back and watching it. I really enjoyed spending this time with you, Matt, discussing it today.
I appreciate that. The weird thing is here, and this is going to sound like I'm being a bit of a look, la la la, look at me sort of thing. I'm not mean to be across that way, and yet. I did the whole of this episode of you without anything, any notes at all. And I also haven't seen it for 5 years.
Why?
I know this pay-per-view so, so well.
Yeah.
That's how good it is. I have watched it so many times over the last 19 years. Guys, as Sai has said here, if you want an example of how you do Survivor Series well, go to 2001. If you want an example of how not to do things well, go to 2004.
Yes, maybe that's a show for another day. We've been fortunate enough to have time here gushing over how wonderful this pay-per-view is. Perhaps we should look at some of the other side of the coin as well in the future.
Well, the good and the bad sort of my deal. So.
That's true. On that note, if you could let everyone know where they can find you on social media and about your shows that I encourage everyone to track down and listen to.
Right, okay. I apologize in advance, but I do have a few things to get out here. Okay,
No problem. You carry on.
Find me at the Matt Attack UK. You can talk to me directly through that. If you want to follow the show I co-host with Graham, you find it at Good Bad Wrestle out every Friday at the moment, but we are moving to a Sunday soon on this network, Video Global Media. It is well worth checking out. I'm not just saying that because I'm on it. It works with her on it. It really does work fantastically well. You can also find me co-hosting Game Junkies every other Saturday, a gaming podcast I host with my buddy Alex. And the other Saturdays of that is Chris from Chris Talks Games, which I produce and edit for him. And then on Sundays at the moment, but going to Fridays, is if you ever played Dungeons & Dragons, we actually have Dungeon Junkies spin-off. It's actually kind of good fun. And we started doing it to get through lockdown and just get through things in general. That's why the hashtag is We Will Get Through This. Ironically, at this point in time, six, seven, 8 months on, and we are pretty much through it, thanks to Dungeons & Dragons. Who would have thought it, eh?
Brilliant stuff.
I also do a podcast with my little brother, James. It's called What You're Talking About, Willis. Literally, we just talk about anything. We just literally just turn the recording device on to have a natter about whatever we're talking about. So listen to that. It comes out every now and again. Just keep an eye on the social media channel, the Visual Club Media, you'll find it. Is there anything else I do? Oh, yeah, Talk with Table, which you've been on, of course, Si.
I have, yeah. I've had a great time on Talk with Table, yeah.
Talk with Table with myself.
With our friend Mags and the excellent Conrad.
Yes, yes. His Lordship, Conrad Newton, of course. Make sure you check out all of Mags' content as well at DJ Kirkby, and obviously all of Conrad's content at El Compacto Newt and at CK Near Falls. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank the people who got me started in podcasting at first, which is Graham and his now 12-year-old son, Mason, over on the MGB Wrestling Podcast at yes. MGB Wrestling Pod. Without them, I would not be here. Without that, Mags would not be here. Without that, by comparison, your good self would not have started.
Definitely not. Definitely not.
All come back to one 10-year-old boy saying to his father, can we make a podcast?
Fantastic stuff.
And that's what wrestling's all about, isn't it? Kids watching wrestling with their dads.
Well, that's what I look forward to my Thursday, getting home from work and watching AEW. So exactly, yeah, that's the highlight of my week for me.
All tied in nicely, sir. Thank you.
There we go.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute honour and a privilege to be on your show.
No, thank you very much for coming on. I've really, really enjoyed it. And we'll definitely have a look at something less smiley in the future. But first of all, I think we need to cover that Monday Night Raw, because if we're encouraging people to go watch Survivor Series, I encourage them to watch that Monday Night Raw the following night as well, if you can find that on the network. Matt, thank you very, very much for your time. I've really enjoyed it. It's been brilliant. And I'll speak to you again soon.
I'm out of here.